This is Spacetime Series 27, Episode 45, for broadcast on the 12th of April, 2024. Coming up on Spacetime, Perseverance collects its 24th sample on Mars, a new date set for Starliner's first manned mission to the space station, and has space junk slammed into a Florida home. NASA is investigating. All that and more coming up on Spacetime.
Welcome to Spacetime with Stuart Gary.
NASA's Mars Perseverance rover has just collected its 24th sample from the surface of the Red Planet. The new geological drill core sample offers new clues about Jezero Crater and the lake that it may once have held. Analysis by instruments aboard the six-wheeled car-sized rover indicate that this latest rock sample was awash with water for an extended period of time in the distant past, perhaps as part of an ancient Martian beach. This latest sample adds to the growing tally, which already includes 21 tubes filled with rock core samples, 2 filled with broken rock and dust called regolith, and 1 filled with Martian atmosphere. Perseverance Project scientist Ken Farley from Caltech says this is the sort of rock he's been hoping to find when his team first decided to investigate Jezero Crater. That's because nearly all the minerals in this sample would have been made in water. On Earth, water-deposited minerals are often good at trapping and preserving ancient organic material and biosignatures. A potential biosignature is a signature or structure that could be evidence of past life. Of course, it could also have simply been produced by pure chemical processes without the presence of life at all. The rock can even tell scientists about the Martian climatic conditions when it was formed. The presence of the specific minerals in the sample is considered promising for preserving a rich record of the ancient habitable environment of Mars. Such collections of minerals are important for guiding scientists to the most valuable samples, which will eventually return to Earth as part of the Mars Sample Return Campaign. Nicknamed Bunsen Peak in honor of the Yellowstone National Park landmark, the rock, which is about 1.7 meters wide and a meter tall, intrigued Perseverance scientists because the outcrop stands tall among the surrounding terrain and has an interesting texture on one of its faces, which offers a nice cross-section of the rock, and because it's not lying flat on the ground, it's less dusty and therefore easier for scientific instruments to investigate. Before taking the sample, Perseverance scanned the rock using both the rover's SuperCam spectrometers and the X-ray spectrometer pixel. Then the rover used the rotor on the end of its robotic arm to grind or abrade a portion of the surface and scan the rock again. The results suggest that Bunsen Peak is composed of about 75% carbonate grains cemented together by almost pure silica. The silica and parts of the carbonate appear microcrystalline, which makes them extremely good for trapping and preserving sides of microbial life that might have once lived in this environment. Additionally, the sample might well be one of the older cores collected so far by Perseverance, and that's important because Mars was most habitable early in its history. This report on Sample 24 from NASA TV.
Sample 24 is called Comet Geyser, and we collected it from the Bunsen Peak rock on the margin unit. The Comet Geyser sample is really exciting for several reasons. This rock is dominated by silica and carbonate. These phases are known on Earth to be good at preserving biosignatures. Carbonate is a phase that forms in association with fluids such as water, which is really important in our search for evidence for past life on Mars. It's still a bit of a mystery what this rock is. There are interesting textures that could be consistent with either an igneous rock or a sedimentary rock. And that's what makes it so exciting to us as scientists, is because we get to put our thinking caps on and really try and solve this puzzle.
The Bunsen Peak sample is the third that Perseverance has collected while exploring the margin unit, a geologic area that hugs the inner edge of Jezero Crater's delta rim. The results so far support the hypothesis that the rocks here all formed along the shores of what was once an ancient lake. The rover is slowly working its way towards the westernmost portion of the margin unit. At the base of Jezero Crater's rim, a location nicknamed Bright Angel is of interest to the science team because it may offer the first encounter with much older rocks that make up the crater rim. Once it's done exploring Bright Angel, Perseverance will begin an ascent of several months in duration to the rim's top. A key objective for the Perseverance mission on Mars is astrobiology, including caching samples that may contain signs of ancient microbial life. The rover will characterize the planet's geology and past climate, pave the way for human exploration to the Red Planet, and be the first mission to collect and cache Martian rock and regolith. Subsequent NASA missions, in cooperation with the European Space Agency, will send a fleet of spacecraft to Mars to collect these sealed samples from the surface and return them to Earth for more in-depth analysis. This is Space Time. Still to come, a new launch date set for Starliner's first manned flight, and NASA investigating what appears to be space junk that slammed into a Florida home. All that and more still to come on Space Time. NASA has set the date of May 6th as the opening of a new launch window for what will be the first manned flight of Boeing's long-troubled CST-100 Starliner. The spacecraft's flight to the International Space Station was originally slated for this month. Of course, that was just the last in a long list of postponements and failures which have brought us to where we are today. But unlike all the past failures which have been put down to technical issues, this one is because of a busy schedule aboard the International Space Station. NASA says the rescheduling is aimed at better aligning with the orbital outpost end-of-April activities. These include the departure of a Dragon cargo spacecraft bound for Earth and the repositioning of another Dragon spacecraft, this one with crew, to make room for Starliner's docking. The test flight will see the Starliner crew of Sonny Williams and Butch Wiltmore travel to the space station, docking with a Harmony module's forward port. That port currently hosts the NASA SpaceX Crew 8 Dragon spacecraft. Crew 8 will need to move the Dragon to the Harmony Zenith port in order to make room for Starliner's arrival. The new timeline also gives the space station more time to wrap up scientific research and place those experiments and other cargo destined for return to Earth aboard the Cargo Dragon spacecraft for its return to Cape Canaveral. Starliner's launch aboard a United Launch Alliance Atlas V rocket from the Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida will see its crew spend around a week on station before returning to Earth and landing on the grounds of the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. If successful, Starliner will finally join Dragon in providing crew transport and launch services under NASA's Commercial Crew Program. Of course, nothing's for certain, and Boeing's Starliner project has had a troubled history. The first unmanned orbital test flight back in December 2019 ended in failure after a faulty mission clock caused the Starliner to initiate its orbital insertion burn too early, placing the spacecraft in the wrong orbit and unable to reach or dock with the space station. And prior to its return to Earth, mission managers detected other software issues. One would have prevented a planned docking with the space station were it even possible, and the other would have affected the thrust firings needed to safely jettison Starliner's service module prior to the command module's atmospheric re-entry. The service module software error incorrectly translated the jettison thruster firing sequence, which would have caused the command and service modules to crash into each other during the separation maneuver, destroying both spacecraft. A joint NASA-Boeing investigation into the disastrous flight identified 80 issues which needed attention before another test flight could be attempted. A second unmanned orbital demonstration test flight was slated for 2021, but was scrubbed after corrosion was detected in 13 of the spacecraft's propulsion system valves, necessitating a major pull-down and rebuild. There are also more software issues to be dealt with, and Boeing also decided to modify the design of Starliner's docking system to add a re-entry cover for additional protection during the capsule's fiery descent through the atmosphere. Eventually, a second orbital unmanned test flight finally launched in May 2022. However, once again, things didn't go smoothly. Two orbital maneuvering and attitude control system thrusters failed during the orbital insertion burn. The spacecraft was able to compensate using the remaining thrusters, together with the addition of the reaction control system thrusters. But then a couple of reaction control system thrusters used to maneuver Starliner also failed during the docking procedure due to low chamber pressures. And some thermal systems used to cool the spacecraft were showing extra cold temperatures, requiring engineers to manage the issue during the docking. The Starliner then returned to Earth 3 days later. Boeing then announced that further flights would be indefinitely delayed due to problems with a parachute harness, which needed to be made stronger, and flammable tape, which amazingly had somehow found its way onto the spacecraft's wiring system. Both issues were eventually rectified by the end of last year. And that's now cleared the way for what hopefully will be the first manned launch of Starliner next month. Needless to say, we'll keep you informed. This is Space Time. Still to come, NASA examining a piece of what could be space junk which slammed into a Florida home. And later in the science report, new research warns that the warming climate could turn Australia's soil into a net emitter of carbon dioxide. All that and more still to come on Space Time. NASA says it's analysing an object that crashed into a Florida man's home last week, which is suspected of being a piece of debris jettisoned from the International Space Station. The object, thought to be part of the EP-9 cargo pallet containing old batteries, smashed through the roof and two floors of the Naples home. The pallet was released from the orbital outpost during a spacewalk back in 2021, and it should have burnt up harmlessly in the atmosphere during re-entry. Of course, it's not the first time that space debris hit the Earth. There are dozens of examples, the two most notable being part of a SpaceX Dragon capsule which came to Earth on an Australian sheep station in 2022, and NASA's first space station Skylab slamming into the West Australian outback near Esperance back in 1979. A bit of it is still on display there if you want to take a look. This is Space Time. And time now to take another brief look at some of the other stories making news in science this week with a science report. New research is showing that the warming climate will turn Australian soils into a net emitter of carbon dioxide unless action's taken. Soil helps keep the planet cool by absorbing carbon. However, as the climate gets warmer, its ability to retain carbon decreases, and in some instances, it can actually start to release some of that carbon back into the air. The findings, reported in the journal Climate and Atmospheric Science, found that Australian soils could account for 8.3% of Australia's total current emissions under the sustainable scenario, and more than 14% by 2045 under a middle-of-the-road or fossil-fueled scenario. It's hard to believe, but a new study has shown that women with low resting heart rates actually had a slightly higher chance of engaging in a criminal lifestyle. The findings, reported in the journal PLOS ONE, are based on research by American and Swedish scientists who investigated the criminal offence records of 12,500 women going back some 40 years. The team also found that unintentional injuries were also slightly more common with these women. Now, let's stress that this kind of study can't directly say that women with low heart rates are going to go around committing crimes. But instead, the researchers are suggesting that low autonomic nervous system arousal, automatic systems in your body, such as your heart rate, might be driving stimulation-seeking tendencies. A new study shows that criminals could one day be identified using a new technique that potentially picks up and records key airborne forensic DNA evidence from crime scenes which have been wiped clean of fingerprints and other trace evidence. A team from Flinders University's Forensic Science Unit put the new method to the test using both a conventional air conditioning unit as well as a portable commercially available air collection device, the sort regularly used to test for COVID-19 and other airborne viruses in hospitals, schools and nursing homes. The findings of the test, reported in the journal Electroforensis, show that DNA evidence could be picked up from the air at a crime scene. 50 people have died in Angola after being forced to drink a herbal potion which was designed to prove they were not sorcerers or witches. Tim Mendham from Australian Skeptics says it's part of a growing problem in some religious communities in Africa which are using a charge of witchcraft to get rid of people they don't like.
One of the problems with a lot of, quite frankly, African countries and countries in the middle of Africa, is that there's a strong religious element which also equates to a suspicion of a strong witchcraft element. I know I've dealt with people in Nigeria who are finding this quite a lot, that basically some fundamentalist evangelical type churches in some of these African countries are calling other people witches and witchcraft, basically because they're not agreeing with them. A lot of the people being accused of being witches are women and some children, and in some cases this leads to mob behaviour and the person being killed, certainly beaten up in the worst sort of cases, and all sorts of strange practices are happening, and it's pretty much uncontrolled, apart from a few brave individuals who are fighting against this. In this particular case, there was a whole bunch of people who were accused of being witches in Angola, and someone worked up some potion, a herbal potion that could be taken by them, and if they died, they were witches. The old days of when you used to dunk people in the water, if they died, they weren't witches.
Well,
of this
Monty
potion
says if they floated, they could be ducks.
That's right. Ha-ha. You're right. Anyway, these victims were forced to drink this liquid, being created by traditional healers. So the religious practices and elements in these groups, wherever they are, sometimes in small villages, sometimes in larger places, it's a real mixture of different sort of cultish behaviours, including traditional healers, witchcraft supposedly, evangelical churches, speaking in tongues, a whole range of different sort of activities, which lead to a certain sense of hysteria. And part of the hysteria is accusing people of being witches, etc., and then taking it to the extreme. So what this says is that be careful in some places of even trying to say something different to what a lot of the locals believe, because
well,
you might end up
dead. Well, isn't
that
what happened in the Salem witch trials in the United States? That same sort of thing?
Well, that was hysteria, right? And that was very similar in a way. And
humans don't learn from history, do they?
Well, they're successful in a way because they're still going and they have a big following. Especially one particular church that I can think of in Nigeria has a big following in which hundreds, thousands, even the people that are there that are getting a bit carried away, and they will do anything that they're told to do, and build up a sense of hysteria. No logic in it, of course. And these people being accused of being witches. They're not witches, by the way, I should add. There's no evidence to show that they're actually doing any witchcraft, or there's no evidence to show there's any witchcraft. But certainly these people aren't
practicing. Someone had a grudge against them, so they're targeted.
They got a grudge against them, and they've also got a grudge against the people who are criticising them generally.
That's Tim Mendham from Australian Skeptics. That's the show for now. Spacetime is available every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday through Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, Acast, Amazon Music, Bytes.com, SoundCloud, YouTube, your favorite podcast download provider, and from spacetimewithstuartgarry.com. Spacetime's also broadcast through the National Science Foundation on Science Zone Radio and on both iHeartRadio and TuneIn Radio. And you can help to support our show by visiting the Spacetime store for a range of promotional merchandising goodies, or by becoming a Spacetime patron, which gives you access to triple episode commercial-free versions of the show, as well as lots of bonus audio content which doesn't go to air, access to our exclusive Facebook group, and other rewards. Just go to spacetimewithstuartgarry.com for full details. And if you want more Space Time, please check out our blog, where you'll find all the stuff we couldn't fit in the show, as well as heaps of images, news stories, loads of videos, and things on the web I find interesting or amusing. Just go to spacetimewithstuartgarry.tumblr.com. That's all one word, and that's Tumblr without the E. You can also follow us through @StuartGarry on Twitter, @SpaceTimeWithStuartGarry on Instagram, through our Spacetime YouTube channel, and on Facebook, just go to facebook.com/Spacetime with Stuart Garry.
You've been listening to Spacetime with Stuart Garry. This has been another quality podcast production from Bytes.com.